Welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Today's show, we have an old friend, Brian Huff from Adventure Lighting. I'm not going to give him too much pub here, but he's in Des Moines, Iowa, and he runs a light bulb store like I do. And we also have the pleasure of being joined by Melissa. I hope I get her last name right. Melissa Mattis? Is that correct, Melissa?
That's right.
Melissa divides her time between architectural lighting design and sustainable manufacturing consulting. As the leader of Sladen Feinstein's sustainability efforts, Melissa is continuously curious about the relationship between architecture, the human experience, and what it means to embody space. In addition to lighting design, Melissa consults with manufacturers on sustainable product development and provides internal educational training for staff. Her design activism for material ingredient reporting of luminaire specifications stems from a personal endeavor to find greater alignment between her proclaimed and practiced values, first at home and now in the workplace. Melissa has taught lighting for the RISDCE program, was named one of Lighting Magazine's International 40 Under 40 in 2020, and currently co-chairs the IES's Sustainable Lighting Committee. She is a frequent speaker at national conferences, and her influence can be followed on stage, film, magazine, podcast, and TV. But Greg, before we get to this interview, which is going to be certainly very fun, and I'm excited, I can't wait to do it, we got to talk about the crazy folks down at TCP. Go to tcpi.com, Greg Garrick.
That's right. You know what I love about them is that you can sell an idea, and you know they're going to have it, and if they don't have it, they're going to make it. That's the type of company they are. They say, well, you want that? Fine, we'll make it. Because they are a manufacturer. A lot of other people sub out their manufacturing. TCP is a legitimate manufacturer, has all the product you need, all the color temperatures, all the items, so, and a lot of stock. Great portal, too. Check them out.
If there's a sustainable award out there for a manufacturer, it should go to TCP for the corn cob killer right now. Give them the award. That product is amazing. And, of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, NAILD.org. We got a big convention coming up, America's Lighting Convention, Greg, Dallas, Texas. We're going to go see the Cowboys Stadium. It's going to be fun, but we're also going to learn a lot about lighting, so check it out. But for right now, Melissa, welcome to the show. Brian, welcome.
Hi there.
Thank you.
So I like sustainability. I like to talk about it. I don't know what the word means. What does it mean to you, Melissa?
I feel like it's one of those words that it's too much of a catchphrase. Like it gets thrown around very loosely. It means something different to everybody that you ask. So I think it can be a little bit tricky to answer that question. But I mean, I think ultimately it's just trying to leave the earth better than how we found it, right? Like trying to do the right thing for future generations.
It's tough. It's a tough word to talk about. In lighting, it gets tossed around, as you say, a lot, actually. And it often gets tossed around by people that have never sold light fixtures to people before, you know? And so they do some things that, you know, I would say are in the name of sustainable that are unsustainable, actually. And, you know, Brian, you had a committee where you guys discussed a lot of these issues from the distributor frontline lighting practitioner, so to speak, perspective. You know, when you talked with your colleagues, Brian, what did you guys think of the word sustainable when it came to lighting?
Well, so I think from the lighting distributor side of it, there's a couple different ways we attacked it. So there's actually, you know, using sustainable materials and leaving, you know, the earth as untouched as possible, right? But on the lighting side of it, it's being able to fix fixtures you have with materials that are readily available and not tossing an entire fixture into the trash and replacing it with another one that had to travel across the world. And that's, you know, when I started in lighting, and I'm not as old as you are, Michael.
Oh.
Close, but not as old. Or when my dad started, you know, a 2x4 fixture was a 2x4 fixture was a 2x4 fixture. And there's light bulbs, there's a ballast, and you can replace all of that. And any more, you know, an entire fixture has to be replaced. Unless it's from a handful of manufacturers where you can find some random ballast LED driver that maybe you can source, maybe you can't. And that's where a lot of the hangups are on the, at least on my committee side, of the sustainability of, you know, our lighting and how we define it.
Melissa, you know, one of the things that, is key to success in the world of, environmental endeavors, say darkness restoration, for example, or night preservation, sustainability, whatever it is, we have to stop doing damage first before we can fix the problem. You understand what I mean? Like sometimes we're just making, I think the lighting industry, Melissa, has to stop making everything worse before we can start talking about actually making things better. There was a group in the UK that's talking about, remanufacturing old light fixtures. And I kind of think like, I feel like that's the wrong end here. Why don't we stop making things that can't be repaired as a first step, Melissa, in the industry? What do you think about that perspective?
I mean, I think based on like the reports, I think the way the trajectory is going, that we probably need to hit this from both ends at the same time. Like we need to stop doing more harm and then also be thinking about how we can do more good at the same time. Just due to sheer like numbers and the way things are going right now, trajectory wise. So I think it's just kind of evolving beyond thinking of just operational carbon, like only looking at like how efficient can we get? And like you're saying, with these LED boards and it's like, oh, as long as it's efficient, then like who cares? But like, that's not really the full story. Like we have to kind of look at the full carbon footprint of a fixture, the full life cycle. So we're looking at embodied carbon and not just operational carbon. So thinking about like where the materials are coming from and how's it manufactured and what does happen to it at the end of its life, because that's really more the full picture. So it's kind of like our lens has just been pretty narrow when we're looking at just the fixture in operation, and we just need to kind of broaden our perspective a little bit and look at the bigger picture.
I find when we broaden our perspective, though, we kind of get lost. And then we make policies like banning all mercury lamps or something like that. Like what happens is once we broaden and broaden and broaden, it becomes more and more hopeless. And so sweeping crude changes happen, like banning all mercury containing lamps and asking people for exemptions rather than picking the top 20 mercury lamps, which constitute all 99% of all mercury lamps, and banning those ones. And then leaving the other ones to be that, the ones that we know have LED alternatives. But these crude things seem to come out when we get away from the front lines. And I think what Brian's sustainability letter came out was that, listen, we need to return to traditional lamp shapes as a fundamental driver of sustainability. Return to those lamp shapes like the corn cob killer, like TLEDs. And on top of that, we know we can't solve all applications, Brian, like you said in your letter, but we can start standardizing the mechanical form factors of LED components so that there is some type of intercompatibility, at least on the set screws. You know what I'm saying? As to how these things actually get mounted mechanically into a fixture. Those are very specific things. And I think the industry could stop making different set screw patterns pretty quickly, don't you?
Yeah, that seems like an easy place to start.
Yeah, but I don't hear a lot of talk about that. I hear a lot of talk about bans of older products, and not a lot of talk about how the new products that they want to replace them with, Greg Eric, the new products, how they should be like the old products in some ways. Mm-hmm. What do you
think? Right. Yeah, and Melissa, that's kind of, I think the most sustainable thing you can do in lighting right now is actually make it replaceable down the line. And that's like the least thing we're doing. We're looking at, let's make better cardboard or less packaging or whatever it is when you ship it. But what happens at the end? And that's where I feel like there's not a lot of focus. So my question to you, Melissa, in your consulting of sustainable manufacturing, what do you talk to them about? What are they asking you for, and what are the people focused on that are manufacturing right now?
I mean, we ask people to look at like what their main commodity fixture is, like what are we hitting our projects with like the most quantity, and then how can we clean up like what's happening there? Like you're saying, like how can we be more modular? Like how replaceable are our parts? How easily serviceable are they? What kind of materials are we using? Like, is there Is there any way to like clean up the, where our materials are coming from and how far they have to travel and all of these different factors that play into the carbon footprint of the fixture itself, even before it ever gets turned on.
Does the does the does like you've mentioned carbon footprint a couple times, and I think that's another one that's kind of it's hard to for people to understand that goal. You know what I mean? It's even for me to conceptualize that is I find that very difficult to like think in terms of carbon. I know that there's carbon taxes and stuff like that. Is there other metrics we can use that maybe make are more real to people?
I mean, I think if we just look at the trends that have been happening in like the larger architectural community, that's what people are looking at is like global warming potential is like a big one that people look at. And so you see that on different environmental product declarations. And though we haven't been seeing that in lighting yet, like our trends follow what's happening in the larger architectural community. And so that's kind of where things are moving at this point for us. It's like we're in lighting, we're just starting to talk about like, oh, like can we clean up like what materials we're using? Like, because it's like we've made the fixture as efficient as possible, but is there, are there ways to make parts more modular and ways that we can look at materials that aren't just going to get dumped in the landfill, or if that is the plan, then can it be as clean sourcing as possible?
Has
Do you
anyone
find
well, yeah, go ahead,
I was
Greg.
going to ask, do you find the companies are reaching out and requesting this, or are you guys, is it more on your end to force people to think about this? Are people actually doing something, or just is it all talk right now?
I think it comes from both ends. Like there are people that are kind of like the how some people were more proactive on taking on LED before that really became a thing. Some people are being proactive about wanting to be on the forefront of this movement and be leaders in the industry. And then others are like, well, let's wait and see like what happens, like if this is really going to have traction. So I think it's on both ends.
So it's safe to say, Brian, you guys really felt on your committee, just to confirm, that the right to repair or the ability to repair a fixture in the field was a key aspect of sustainability from your perspective.
So I, when you talk about like the carbon footprint of creating a fixture and sending it to market, you can do, I think there's a lot to be done on, sourcing your materials with, carbon footprints in mind and all that stuff. But when you create a big box of a 2x4 fixture or 2x2 for that matter, and send it across the world two or three times to get to where it needs to go, and when that fixture dies in 5 years, you've got to do it again. It doesn't make sense. Now, whoops. If you do have, the parts to replace that, the other side of this is that there's 100 different manufacturers all making a similar fixture, and none of those drivers that any one manufacturer has works in any other manufacturer. So if I have to stock, as a distributor, a driver that'll work for a TCP fixture or a Keystone fixure, and I don't want to call out any names,
Yeah,
I'm
there's no
just
one to call that.
naming anything. Yep. So that's another driver or a box of drivers that I have to source from around the world, bring it in, and I've got to do one for every manufacturer. That doesn't make sense.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, Melissa, has anyone done a detailed analysis about of the sustainability of the lighting industry, say from 1940 to 2010, when we were able to create these replaceable cross-manufacturable product lines? So, for example, I mean, a two-lamp T8 ballast, doesn't matter whose brand it is, doesn't matter if it's TCP, Keystone, GE, Philips. So you just pop that ballast in there, and the wires are all the same color. And you just wire it up and go, and it works with the same lamp, no matter whether it's GE, Philips, Sylvania, or whatever, and the socket and the thing. And how did the lighting industry achieve that level of sustainability before and then abandon it? Has anyone done an analysis of why we decided to abandon all of our principles that kept us running for 100 years? Has anyone figured that out yet? How that happened?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I mean, I think just like the nature of LED being know, like these electronic components, like has just brought us in a, it's like a whole new, it's a whole new industry, right? It's like a brand new ball game that everyone's playing.
I
Yeah,
think,
that'd be interesting to look at.
the LED, what's the word I'm looking for? The technology was derived from computer chips, right? So computer chips and memories and hard drive, that stuff isn't interoperable, as far as I know. So that's, a certain amount of milliamp that has to hit the chip, the watts, the current, all that stuff is important, and it needs to be specified on a particular chip. And it's really tough to do that across the board. But I think we've made the fixtures efficient enough to the point where we can create some standards, especially on the high moving, high volume items that everybody uses. I think from an architectural standpoint, if you're putting in a really special fixture into an application that needs to do what it's doing and it needs to look just right, I understand that that's going to be really tough to create a modular situation. But the 2x4s, the can lights, the stuff that's the basic stuff that takes the bulk of container ships moving across the country or across the world, I think that's where you can start to save.
Couldn't agree
Yeah,
more.
I think that would make a lot of sense. Like if you had, you know, like the drivers and boards that were more standardized, then I think the then could we be reclaiming the lighting at the end of the space, you know, when the space is getting remodeled, like could that be treated more like furniture where it's easier to reclaim that instead of just dump it because nobody knows anything about the maintenance of the fixture.
People that talk about reclaiming 2x4 fixtures at the end of a life have never taken out 100 2x4 fixtures from a ceiling on a project before. Like, it's not
Period.
like that. It's not, I mean, you're ripping those things out, sucker. And they come out of the ceiling really quick, and you're putting the new fixtures in. And, nobody's going to handle those things with kid gloves. They're just going to get chucked into a metal bin and off they go to the recycler. That's this idea of remanufacturing old 2x4s, especially with the metal, the thin metal they make them with now. You can bend those things in half. Try doing that with an old 2x4 from the 70s. You won't be able to bend it in half, even if you're a big elephant seal like Greg Garrick. Right, Greg?
That's right. And Brian touched on it a little. We've been talking a lot on the manufacturing side, and since you're a designer, I kind of want to shift to that side of it a little bit on the architectural side. How much does sustainability, or again, whatever the word means in that case, but how much of that is factored into what you're designing now?
You know, it's something that hasn't always been a part of that conversation. It's, I think since the pandemic, it's become more a part of the conversation. And sometimes it's something that the client will bring up in a meeting. And if they don't, then it's something that we've started bringing up ourselves in the meeting with the architect to kind of see what the, because a lot of firms will have 2030 goals as well. And so there's certain benchmarks they're trying to meet. And so it's a conversation as to how we can work together to try and achieve those goals. So it's definitely becoming more common part of the conversation.
Is the discussion ever around how are we going to maintain that fixture, or how are they going to repair it in the future? Does that ever come up in the design process?
I think that's more commonly a client concern as like the maintenance and longevity of the fixtures, for sure.
That's usually handled with some BS warranty, though. It's 10-year warranty. Oh, it's a 10-year warranty? Yeah. Oh, okay, then we're
5
good.
years.
Because no, but I mean, you have like people think LEDs are going to last forever. It's and you say to them, look, that fixture will need to be replaced. We had a guy in here just the other day, put in. He wanted to buy 4 inch recessed flat panels because he to change because he had four burned out in his basement. He can't match those. He's got to replace all 12 of them now in order for it to match in his dumb basement that he just renovated 3 or 4 years ago. And four of them are out.
And yeah, one question I have, and it is, and it's kind of open, but the sustainability piece, isn't that people's time too? Like, if you think about, especially when you look at
Sure. Weights of
architectural
time.
design, and there's a lot of times where, hey, this fixture would look really cool in that spot that you'll never be able to access again. And we run into it all the time where we're going and having to figure out how to get to that fixture now that's 3 stories up and over there and looks great, but it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, you got to build a $70,000 custom scaffold has to go into the place to change the fixture.
Right.
Yeah, that's part of the game. And it's too, like, it's like the way spaces turn over. I mean, a lot of times, I mean, the design is only going to be there for, like you said, 5 years anyway, you know, so, and then everything's getting gutted. It's just the way, like, space is treated.
So I actually went to university and studied English lit. Okay. So, like, I would say to people, you know, don't spend a lot of money studying English lit. But, you know, I think it helped me in this particular moment right now. Okay. The best poetry ever written in the history of the English language was written in iambic pentameter in sonnets that are a certain number of lines and a certain number of, my brain's, whatever you call them, syllables per line and all this kind of stuff. But you would never know it when you read the poem that there was all these rules. And you know what? I feel like the Wild West of LED has created all these, like, everybody's focused on the potentiality and all the magic you can do with LED. But the fact of the matter is we need to put some restrictions on that for general use applications, like what Brian was saying. You know, yeah, sure, make your high-end $15,000 chandelier that goes in the lobby or whatever. Designers go wild in certain spaces. But I think what I'm hearing from Brian on his committee, what he said earlier, is like, let's knock out this day-to-day stuff. Like, why are we making flat panels differently from every manufacturer with different drivers and different arrays? Like, let's get the stuff that lighting distributors sell and standardize it, not more standardization, complete standardization. We should be able to do that very quickly, Melissa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that could solve a lot of problems, especially with the commodity fixtures.
So, and I think, you know, the end user that, you know, we deal a lot with, they come in with, you know, hey, this fixture's out. Or this, you know, I need a new driver for this. And like, it's a 6-week process to get a replacement part for a certain fixture. Like, that's not, and I use the term sustainable lightly, but like, that's not sustainable either. No. And my opinion of our architects, a lot of what they're trying to do is sell expensive stuff. Sure. And because they get a cut of that, right? And that they're running their business, and that's great. It looks great, but there has to be some sort of talk with in their business about how we maintain these fixtures. And when they're not, you know, whether it's name brand or fixtures manufacturers that have been around for a decade or so, you know, this stuff dies, and we can't find it anywhere. So you're.
But you know what? I don't blame the architects. I think the architects are using their palette. They're building beautiful things. You know, whatever. I think the lighting industry has abdicated its responsibility to do this. Like, I don't even know who's in charge of this. Whether it's NEMA or ANSI or IES or who would actually come along and say, "Hey, you want to bring that fixture into the." You know, USMCA, which formerly NAFTA area of the world, it has to conform to these particular standardization metrics or you can't bring it in here. I don't even know who would do that, Greg. Do you know who would do that? Melissa, do you know who would do that? Does anyone know who would go to the government and say this, you know, would it be NEMA, ANSI, IES that would go to them and say, hey, make them like this? Who would do that? Who's in charge?
We need some lighting lobbyists.
I you know, listen, it's definitely not the mandate. It's not the mandate of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. We exist to serve the interests of the independent lighting distributor. That's what we do. We're not a standards organization, Greg. I don't think it's us.
No, well, let me ask you, Melissa, this is another question. You're the IES co-chair of Sustainable Lighting Committee. What are you guys doing there?
So this committee is in charge of writing the LP 1020, which is basically just a guideline for how to use lighting in a way that's more sustainable. So the committee works on the document, keeps it updated. Hmm.
Has that been released yet?
Is that related to the manufacturing of and the carbon footprint of and, you know, what type of phosphors and that kind of stuff? Or are we talking about the interoperability of stuff?
The committee is made up of manufacturers and designers, so it's a perspective of both sides. of that. Yeah, and there's a current version. We're working on releasing a new version that is going through the publishing process soon.
How many people are on that committee?
There's around 20 or so.
20? How often does it meet?
Once a month. And then we have subcommittees that meet more frequently.
And is anybody on that committee paid, or is it all volunteer work?
We're all volunteers.
The IES always blows me away with the volunteers. I mean, we can get Brian to come on a podcast or two and chair a couple meetings, but that's it, man. He's not doing that much volunteering. You know what I mean? But it's tough to get people to volunteer that much time. Is there somebody that, is it time for the lighting industry to maybe pay some people to get this done a little bit quicker, faster, and more thorough?
It's a great question. I'd love to know who's paying for that.
That's
Well,
always the issue with the lighting. Who's paying for it? For
somebody
everything that
paid for it
needs to
in the
be done.
past. Somebody did all this work in the past. I mean, come on, there's no way by accident that GE and Philips and all these made the same T12 ballast with the same color wires and the same wiring diagram, and then did the same thing with T8, and then did the same thing with T5, and they all agreed to make the lamps the same length so they were compatible, the socket was the same, the you
Yeah,
know
you,
the
if they were trying to make money, they would make theirs proprietary, right?
Well, no, that's true and not true. So if they were trying to make it unsustainable, they would do that, right? If they were trying to
Well,
make it.
sustainable and, trying to make as much money for yourself as possible, those two things don't mesh very
There
well.
must have been a committee that grabbed GE, Sylvania, and Philips. Philips, GE, and Sylvania paid for it, and they said, this is how you make lamps. 48 inches long, G13 socket. Eighth of an inch, 8/8 of an inch thick with this phosphor is 741K. If this one, it's 841K, you can label it. Now go make them. And that's somebody did that. I want to know who it is. Who is the guy that did that? Told everyone what was up. That's who we need to come on the podcast, Melissa. Who was
Yeah,
that person?
it
Does that
had
even
to
know
have
anyone at
been
the
like.
DOE?
I don't think it was a DOE. I think it was NEMA and ANSI. I think
It
ANSI's
was
part of
ANSI
NEMA.
would be my guess, but
Well, we need to put those guys back in charge because they did a great job for 100 years. I mean, really, they did. And it was, I'll tell you, the lighting industry is less sustainable today, and I would argue less healthy today. Like the with all the flickering LED tubes and all the light pollution and all of the all the stuff we've done over the last 10 years with Johnny Come Lately and the lighting marauders coming into the industry, we've produced a lot of bad light fixtures. You ever seen those ones that flicker, Melissa, that are flickering
Oh, yeah.
off and on? It's disgusting. There are millions of those light fixtures deployed in the field right now, flickering on people. We solved that problem in the 90s with T8.
But on the good side of it, I mean, we have reduced a lot of energy dependence on the fixtures. That's not something to take totally lightly, so
I agree with you.
that's
There's
good.
societal benefits to energy efficiency as well. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there is. And that's
It's
good.
not all doom and gloom.
I know, I always get so negative. I love this business, by the way, Melissa. I think we're in the absolutely the most dynamic and industry there in the world right now. I don't think there's one that even compares to the lighting industry at the cusp we're on with all the science that's coming out about lighting, all the things that we can do, all the research and everything else. I don't think there's been a better time to be in this industry. It's so exciting. But we have to improve, Melissa, and we need to fix a few things. So we're a little bit critical.
Yeah, it's good to be having these kinds of conversations, you know.
Any final thoughts? We'll start with Melissa and then we'll go to Brian before we close it out.
I think there's something to be said about the modularity of the drivers and the circuit boards, like the actual modules themselves. I'd love to see the next conversation talking about, who do we need to talk to about these sorts of things? I think, especially like we were talking about for the commodity fixtures, that could be something that could be a big move.
Okay, Brian.
it's neat to have a different perspective on what I've talked about for 6 8 months hearing a little bit more about the carbon footprint of everything. Yeah, that's interesting. So Some to work toward, but yeah, I think we're on the right track. Maybe.
I think we're in conversation mode right now, Greg Eric. But I'll tell you this: my opinion, my 2 cents. Traditional legacy lampshapes are more sustainable than purpose-built light fixtures. That's what I've come out with. Both, you know, the wattage is it's tough to get the performance you get with a purpose-built light fixture, but it's only 10 or 15%. It's not that much energy performance difference. And I think we should go back to legacy lampshapes, and TCP, Greg Garrick, does the best job of that. Go to tcpi.com, check out their corn cob killer. Man, that's a sustainable product right there. A little bit of glass, a little tiny filament inside. Disconnect the ballast, screw in the corn cob killer, and they got 22K to match HPS. So you keep the nice warm color temperature, Greg Eric.
That's right, and that's something that they've always done. And you know, we've had personal discussions with the owner Ellis over there, and he believes in the bulb. You know, he wants that to be replaceable down the road, and that's what they do. And they give you every color temp you want, every shape, every size, all of it. TCP's got.
TCPI.com. Check them out. They're also the craziest folks in lighting, but they're awesome too. And of course, Greg, we got to talk about the Nailed Convention coming up real soon. Be there or be there. Be square, sucker. That's right. America's Lighting Convention. All the distributors are going to come. We're going to figure everything out. And we're also going to check out the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. That sounds like a good time. I'm going to wear my Toronto Argonauts sweater. Yeah. What do we call that? Jersey. Yeah, Toronto Argos. That's right, coming in hot. And you, the listener and the watcher and all you folks out there, we love you guys. Bye for now.